Polycystic ovarian syndrome, or PCOS, is a cluster of hormonal problems characterized by malfunction of the ovaries. Ovulation is irregular, and so is the monthly cycle. Pregnancy is less common, and miscarriages more likely. Because hormones and their carrier proteins are unbalanced, the normally low levels of androgens like testosterone are elevated, resulting in acne, male pattern hair growth, and occasionally male pattern baldness. And if that's not enough, there is a more serious side to PCOS. Stand by, Go Healthy for Good starts right now. I'm Dr. Nerida. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Today's topic, PCOS. While impacting hormones, it changes metabolism. It's difficult to control weight, and there's a higher chance of sleep apnea, diabetes, hypertension, insulin resistance, and elevated cholesterol and lipids. All risk factors for cardiovascular disease. The diagnosis of PCOS is often made during the teens or 20s, when most people are healthy and ready to take on the world. So it can be a difficult pill to swallow. Meet Lana and her husband Phil as they share their very personal journey with PCOS.
I found out I had PCOS when I was in my early 20s. During my teenage years, I never really had a regular cycle. And then in my early 20s, I started studying, and I think it was probably quite stressful, so my cycle stopped completely. And I went to see a doctor who diagnosed me with a condition then. The main type of treatment was to just go on the pill, which I did do for probably a year maybe. But it was, kind of mucked with my hormones quite badly and made me quite grumpy and down, and so I stopped taking that. I ended up finding a place that did natural hormone replacement, and they used a cream that was from a yam plant actually, and that helped for a little while, but it sort of stopped working, so then I just wasn't treated at all after that, kind of gave up. So I knew that it would impact, having the PCOS would impact having a family and my fertility. So when me and Phil got married, we knew that we didn't have forever to start trying. So got married when we were 20, when I was 29, and we started trying when I was about 31. And because of that, I went straight to a fertility specialist and got some help. For 6 months, they put me on a drug called metformin, which helps with your glucose. And it's a medication that I use for diabetics. It just helps with insulin resistance, which they think there's a bit of a link between PCOS and insulin resistance. So that didn't really work for me. So the next step they did was to put me on a drug called Clomiphene, or Clomid. And what that does is basically helps you ovulate. So the condition is such that you start to form an egg, but it doesn't release because of the hormones. And then so the egg just doesn't release and it dies and causes cysts on your ovary. So the tablet allows the egg to be released, and it's not a very nice drug to be on. It's very makes you very hormonal, and has quite a few side effects. So they started me on that, and I think it was probably the third cycle that I fell pregnant, which is really good because we thought that was going to take us a lot longer than that. What they do is they start you on a low dose of the drug, and they build you up to a maximum dose of, I think, 150 milligram. So they had me on the maximum dose, and I fell pregnant, which was really awesome. And unfortunately, we got to about 7 weeks and we lost the baby, which was very devastating for us.
With difficulty getting pregnant and then having a miscarriage, that's devastating indeed, and miscarriages are more common with polycystic ovarian syndrome. Still, it's the commonest endocrine disorder in women and affects 1 in 6. It's on the increase. impairing fertility and increasing the risk of heart disease and even cancer. On today's show, we have two experts with practical advice on how to reduce its impact on you and your family. Plus, we'll show you a quick and easy non-dairy cream. But first, the news. In the headlines today, BPA implicated in polycystic ovarian syndrome, pregnancy complications with PCOS, and spouse with diabetes raises partner's risk. A lot of research has recently been done looking for why women get PCOS. A potential culprit is bisphenol A, or BPA for short. It's a chemical commonly used as a plasticizer. Its molecular structure enables it to bind to estrogen receptors in the body, making it an endocrine disruptor. Recent observational studies show higher levels of BPA in women with PCOS who also have elevated androgen and insulin levels in which BPA is also implicated. Mother's exposure to BPA during pregnancy may also increase the risk of PCOS in her female offspring. The European Food Safety Authority has just lowered the tolerable daily intake by 90% in view of new findings related to BPA. So ladies, avoid the use of plastic bottles and containers, canned food and dental sealants unless you know that they are BPA free. Women with PCOS are at increased risk of a number of pregnancy complications. A review of study findings involving 5,000 pregnant women with PCOS and 120,000 without PCOS demonstrated a threefold increase in gestational diabetes and pregnancy-induced hypertension. There was a doubling of the risk of preeclampsia or toxemia and of preterm birth. Caesarean sections were also more common. So ladies, maintain those healthy lifestyle choices all the way through pregnancy. It will definitely make a difference for you and your baby. Being married to a diabetic could increase your chances of developing type 2 diabetes, according to new research. We know that diabetes risk is inherited, but spouses are generally not genetically related. However, they share important influences critical for gene expression, like living environments, resources, eating patterns, physical activity levels, and other health behaviors. It has already been established that obesity in a spouse increases one's risk of obesity by 37%. So when researchers looked for concordance with diabetes, they found it, ranging from a 70% increased risk in the UK to just 10% in China. Overall, though, the study showed an increased risk of 26%. So couples, if one of you has diabetes, then work on a solution together. For the one who doesn't have it, I think it's time for a diabetes test. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's health news. Joining me now in the studio is Dr. Joseph Doyle, gynaecologist from Shady Grove Fertility. He specialises in reproductive endocrinology and infertility. The term polycystic ovarian syndrome is really a description of what the ovaries might look like with PCOS. I asked Dr. Doyle to describe them for us.
If you've looked at a polycystic ovary, it's an ovary where, you know, it's normal that an ovary has cysts or little follicles on it. That's where the eggs are. Now, with a polycystic ovary, you have lots and lots of those little follicles stuck in that early stage in their development.
And how long do they stay there?
So it's actually, you know, it's a continuous turnover process of all of these very, very small ones. You don't have that normal cyclic, you know, each month a big one forming and getting released. You just have this steady state of lots and lots of very, very small ones, which gives it that polycystic appearance.
Mm. And so they can be quite large too.
Yeah, you know, as you build, as the number of these cysts build up in the ovary, you might not have one dominant one, but you have many, many small ones that makes them, the ovaries actually appear enlarged.
Mm. How common is PCOS?
It's a very common disorder. It's the most common endocrine disorder that women will experience in their lives. You know, there's a couple different ways that it's classified, but generally somewhere between 10 and 15% of women can be affected by PCOS.
That's a lot.
It's the most common.
Yeah, that's like one in six women.
Yeah.
And are we seeing more as as time goes on? Is it increasing?
It does relate to obesity. So as a population gets heavier, you would anticipate to see more PCOS. Now, part of the discrepancy in measuring the exact prevalence is how there's not perfect agreement on how to define it. So that's what gives us a little bit of a range, and that makes it difficult to estimate kind of going forward the prevalence. But it is, it's 10-15%, as you say. That's a very common disease.
So if there's a little disagreement about classifying or diagnosing it, presumably there can be a little delay in women finding out that they have PCOS.
Certainly. Both being common and with, a little bit of a discrepancy in defining it, there are certain core things. And so we are getting agreement on the core, but some of the nuances of it can be a little difficult to interpret.
So tell us, what are the core things?
So the core things are people with PCOS have irregular cycles. That means their period can go, they can skip months and months, or they can entirely lack periods altogether. They'll go a whole year, not a single period. The other thing that women with PCOS have in common is elevated androgen levels. Androgens are hormones like testosterone, is one example. And men and women have androgens and estrogens. It's a matter of ratio. Women with PCOS just happen to have a ratio that's slightly tilted towards a higher level of androgens. And then the third thing that you commonly you hear about is the appearance of those ovaries. What we were just talking about, that polycystic appearance can be defined on things we look at in an ultrasound.
So it's an ultrasound, and it's just observing a woman and then also inquiring about her cycle. Now, I know we don't know what causes it, but are there risk factors that would set a woman up for a higher risk of getting it?
Yes, there's certainly certain populations that have a higher risk of PCOS. This would include people with elevated insulin levels in their body. Insulin is something that drives glucose into our cells so our cells can use it, but it can also, if you look at how insulin works at the ovary, it actually stimulates the ovary to produce androgens. That creates this cycle where androgen increases then interfere with the normal follicular development, so you don't release that egg like you normally do, and so the problem kind of circles around on itself. So people with elevated insulin levels, it doesn't have to be just obese people, but that's a very at-risk population.
Anyone else? Does it run in families?
Yeah, you certainly see a genetic component to it, too. People who have family members with PCOS are certainly more likely than just the general population. But it's probably somewhere 2 to 3 times more common when you see it running in families.
So if your mum or your sister has it,
be on the lookout for how your cycles are working too.
Yeah. And it can be just even starting menses later in life, isn't it?
Yeah.
It can just be a little sign.
Yeah, absolutely. Oftentimes it starts at the time of the first period. Women classically describe, from my first period, they've been irregular the whole time. Some people kind of tip into it later in life. It's not been a problem until they've suddenly put on 20 pounds because lifestyle changes or something along those lines, and then they kind of get tipped into the disease.
After the break, I want to show you a sweet pouring cream for desserts, and it's healthy.
There is a garden in every childhood. An enchanted place where colours are brighter, the air softer, and the morning more fragrant than ever.
Of all life seasons, childhood is the most beautiful.
Children are the living messages we send to a time we will not see.
Blessed indeed is the man who hears many gentle voices call him Father.
A child can ask 1,000 questions that the wisest man cannot answer.
When I approach a child, I have two thoughts: affection for what he is today and respect for what he can become.
There are no 7 wonders of the world in the eyes of a child. There are 7 million.
Children are one third of our population and all of our future.
He called a little child to him and placed the child among them. And he said, "Truly, I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever takes the lowly position of this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me."
Thing I missed when I went dairy-free was whipped cream. I love whipped cream on my desserts and sometimes on my breakfast. And I found this recipe. It's called pear cream, and it's a wonderful substitute. And joining me now to help me make it is Rymiel. And Rymiel, how old are you?
I'm 11 years old.
Well, it's great having you on the show. And being 11, it means that you're now qualified to make pear cream.
Thank you.
So, you ready to drive?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to let everybody know what's in our pear cream. There's a quarter cup of cashews, a half teaspoon of vanilla, 1 tablespoon of honey or one date, and 1 can of pears with their juice. And it's good to get pears that don't have sugar in, isn't it? Yeah, we get 100% pears in juice. All right, what I need you to do is put everything into the blender. So in go the pears with their juice, and you can even make this with raw pears, just straight out of the fruit bowl, just a pear. But those that will go brown, so if you're going to eat it straight away, go for it. I've done it many times. But if you're going to want to store it for a little while, then using the pears out of the can is ideal. Oh, now we've got to put a little sweetener in there, so in goes the honey, and then a little vanilla essence. That really gives it that lovely flavour. And when you're whipping cream, you often put vanilla in anyway. So, and now we're going to put the fat in. And the fat is the cashews. And, you know, in whipped cream, normally we've got saturated fats. But in this one, we've got it full of monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fats. So now we're just going to blend that up. Oh, I'm having trouble getting this lid on, Rymiel. I should have left you to do it, shouldn't I? There we go. Yeah. You want to blend it for us? You good with machines?
Yeah.
Great. And what we're looking for when we're blending is to see the little bits of nut disappear. And we saw that, didn't we? It went from kind of bitty to just like that. So let's come over and see what we've got for breakfast. For breakfast today, we've got some baked oatmeal with some nice fresh fruit. And now we're going to have some pear cream. So, should we pour that over our fruit? You might want to put that back over there for us. Very good. So we'll drizzle that over. Oh, that looks so scrummy. You ready to taste it? Here you go, armed and dangerous. Ready? Good? Yeah, I love this recipe. Well, thanks for coming on the show, and thanks for helping us make pear cream.
You're welcome.
Lana learned about her diagnosis of PCOS in her 20s. After finally conceiving, she and Phil had the devastation of a miscarriage. That dented their confidence, but they picked themselves up, and here's what they tried next.
Going on the drug, I kept on it for quite some time. I can't remember exactly how long. I was on the highest dose, and they basically said to me, "We're basically flogging a dead horse, it's not working." They decided to do a procedure on me called ovarian drilling, and for some reason that actually gets you cycles going again and gets you ovulating. So that worked. At the same time, they also did studies in my uterus and found that one of my tubes was blocked, and I was 1 month out from IVF. This is 3 years after starting my first cycle. We thought we'll just try it one more time. They put us on a low dose and we fell pregnant with George. So that was a miracle for us. And just before then, I was in quite a low place, and I cut right back with my hours at work and started focusing more on my exercise and diet, which really helped because quite a miracle. Mm. Yeah, and now we have little George. We wanted another child. I was ready for it. I thought, I'll wait till George is one, and I'll start at one because I know it will take could take another couple of years. And first treatment, we felt pregnant, which was a bit of a shock to me. So there's only 20 months between them, so it's a reasonably close gap, which keeps us on our toes. But yeah, we're very blessed. And to have a boy and a girl too, it's just, yeah, it's a real miracle. Part of the syndrome is your hormone imbalance. So it's something that's quite hard to live with. It's basically like having PMS all the time. So you're on a cycle like this all the time. And nothing actually happens, like you don't get your cycle. After having both of my children, my cycles have come back, which is really good. But I find that my symptoms are very severe, like I get very hormonal and very down. And poor Phil probably takes the brunt of that, so it affects his life. And in fact, being pregnant is the most stable I've ever been with my with my emotions and my hormones. So the other thing that also affected with me was actually breastfeeding my children. I wasn't able to do that.
Yeah, we merged slowly onto the bottle and then everything became simple and
straightforward
again.
But I think
life returned to normal for us.
For me, it still hurts that I couldn't do it. It sounds really silly, but and I guess that's sort of a scar that this condition's given me too, is the fact that I couldn't breastfeed my children and sort of feel a little bit like I failed. But I know it's not my fault. A comment that's very common, it's like, oh, you're lucky that you don't get your periods. But what they don't realise is that it's just, you are actually getting symptoms and stuff still. You just feel like you're not really a proper woman because you don't function like everybody else does. Personally, I don't like being on the pill. It's not something that agrees with me. But if I have to do it, I will. And yeah, we'll see what the future holds, really. With the condition, it does make it more likely that you could get diabetes in later on in life, especially if there's history of it in your family. So I need to be aware of that. I have an impression from God that two's what I'm supposed to have, and that's what I can handle. And because they're very close together, I do struggle a little bit, and it keeps me very busy. So I don't think a third would be a very wise decision. We did try for a little bit. But yeah, I'm sort of coming to a place now that I think I need to close that door and focus on my beautiful children and be very thankful and grateful for them.
Great way to look at it. Gratitude at its best. I'm with Dr. Doyle in the studio discussing PCOS and its impact on the monthly cycle. I asked him to explain why the irregularity.
The women with PCOS have irregular cycles, and that's a very kind of broad term. Some people will go 45 days or 60 days between their periods. Some women will go a whole year without a period. Now, there's multiple things that are working along. It's a complex endocrine interaction that results in a follicle getting released each month. But kind of some of the core components specific to PCOS also carry out on the ovary. So some of it is the signals from the brain to the ovary. So your LH, luteinizing hormone, and your FSH levels are a little bit out of skew to typical. So instead of having that normal sequence of the hormones that recruit a follicle, help it develop, the other ones will go away, and that one will release the egg for the month, you have just enough stimulation so that all the little follicles are getting a little bit of a stimulation, but they're never getting to that point where one kind of pulls ahead of the pack. Androgens are feeding into that problem because the things that are stimulating androgen production in the body, insulin or androgen production elsewhere, those are acting on the ovary too. Androgens aren't good for a follicle to develop. And so a follicle where that egg is inside, exposed to androgens, are going to kind of get stuck. And then instead of turning into a nice, healthy egg, they will kind of fall apart in their development, and it's called atresia. They just get degraded by the body. So a big group is getting recruited just with this little stimulation, but then that androgens are kind of hurting the whole group, so nothing gets to a dominant size. And this just keeps happening repeatedly through the cycle. Some women are able to break out once in a while. They'll have just enough stimulation from the brain, you'll get that dominant follicle, and then they will have a period every 45 days or 60 days or so. Some people are never able to get out of that cycle because it perpetuates itself. And so they'll go, they can easily go a year without a period, and that can be dangerous.
Yes, it can. And having a period doesn't necessarily mean that ovulation happened either,
right,
does it?
Right. And so, you know, that creates a problem, a twofold problem, because if people don't know, you know, if they're trying to plan for a family, having an idea of when ovulation happens can help them in that process. And so if they don't know when it happens, and this is a 60-day stretch or a 100-day stretch, it's hard to, you know, become pregnant. The other part is sometimes they do have bleeding, and then they think, oh, my period finally came, it's going to restart. But sometimes just because the lining of the uterus has gotten so thick, just because of this prolonged stimulation, it's not actually a period, it's just that the lining has become unstable, and you can have what seems like a period, but it's not a true period.
It's like a tall building just toppling over.
Yeah, it's like the top of the building falling over because it got too tall.
Yeah, but then you don't lose all of the lining like
right.
you normally would.
Right.
And so tell us, you mentioned that can be dangerous.
Yeah. So I think that's a great analogy with the top of the building toppling over. You know, it's like one of those games when you're a kid and you're trying to make your stack taller and taller. Top falls off and you keep building and the bottom is just shaky. Now, the problem with your lining is you do need that regular shedding. You ought to have a period at least every 3 months mm-hmm. just to protect it, because when it gets really complex, that can, you know, over time, that complexity can lead to first the early changes, and then more complexity builds on top of that. And ultimately, no periods for long, long periods of time can be the first steps towards cancer of the uterus. And so that's really important. You have a regular cycle, that's going to protect you against that.
So it's important to think about the three-month rule.
Right.
And, one thing that is good about uterine cancer is it often does give a warning while it's in the pre-cancer
right.
stage, and
right.
that's easy to
experience. It's our body trying to kind of send out the SOS sign.
Yes, yeah. And now you mentioned the androgen excess, or the, you know, if we say testosterone. And,
yeah.
And that causes an embarrassing complication, doesn't it, with the
hysteresis? Yeah, you know, we think of it, and in the fertility world, we tend to focus on the effect on the follicles and eggs and development of the baby, but it also, of course, elevated androgens, that's what make guys, you know, the appearance of males, that kind of defines them. So facial hair or increased muscle mass, even balding can be part of it, or acne. Those are kind of some of those annoying signs of excess androgens or testosterone.
So acne and hair growth and
yeah.
and hair that's coarse or appearing where it normally wouldn't for
right. Women typically complain of it, and there's certain areas of our body that are more sensitive to androgens when it comes to hair growth. So I would think of your face or your chest or lower abdomen. Those are the kind of women with PCOS where it's not typically seen in a female population. It'll appear in those sort of areas.
Now, you mentioned also about the insulin resistance, and I'm thinking diabetes, cardiovascular risk
yeah.
factors like cholesterol and things like that. Why does that happen with PCOS, and what's going on there?
You know, there's PCOS, it's not one of the diagnostic criteria, but a very common thread through it is insulin resistance. And, you know, between the androgens, the testosterone, we know women have males beat by 10 years, at least in life expectancy. And that's part of the reason. Those androgens are part of it. And the insulin is a part of it, too. We know how that relates to diabetes. So just if you look at a PCO population, you know, by definition, they're at risk for insulin resistance. So if you screen everyone, about a third of them turn out to have evidence of glucose intolerance. That's like the first step before diabetes. And then 10% of them will have actual diabetes. So you always have to screen folks for that whenever you see them. And the elevated androgens, yes, that will have, you know, it does impact your cardiovascular system, just like, you know, diabetes does as well. So it's kind of two things. You got two hits. The third thing is oftentimes this population is obese. And so obesity compounded by elevated insulin levels and your androgens is kind of just a bad synergy on cardiovascular health. So all the markers that we know put you at risk for cardiovascular disease, diabetes, higher cholesterol, even like inflammatory markers, all those things get elevated in this population.
On the other side of the break, Dr. Doyle will be joined by a nutritionist and we'll get straight into the treatment options for PCOS. But first, consider this. A woman sat by a dusty road. She was an outcast because her monthly cycle was constant and painful for the last 12 years. She'd spent all her money on a cure, but none was to be found. One day, hope sprang in her heart. Jesus was in town and she knew where he was headed. She stood on the sidewalk and waited. Her problem was very private, but so important. She didn't want to make a scene, yet without healing, she would die from anemia. If I could just touch his cloak, she thought, I will be healed. Jesus recognized determination when he saw it and made sure that despite the crowd, he would pass close by her. She reached out for the edge of his coat. In that one touch was concentrated the faith of her life. Instantly, she felt a thrill of energy in every fiber of her being. She knew that she'd been healed. Jesus stopped. Who touched me? He asked. Crazy question, right? Except to her. No touch of faith goes unnoticed. No suffering is ignored. Daughter, he said, be of good comfort. Your faith has made you whole. Go in peace.
As for me, I call to God and the Lord saves me. Evening, morning, and noon I cry out in distress, and he hears my voice.
Whatever you do, do it all in the name of the Lord.
And we're back. Now, it's really important to get really practical when it comes to managing the problem of PCOS. And so I've got this whole array of fruits and vegetables and other good things here. And we know that these things can be so helpful in managing the problems that come with PCOS, like the weight gain, the abnormal lipids and cholesterol, the pre-diabetes or diabetes. And so joining me now is Nicole with her expertise in nutrition. Nicole, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Tell us, what can be helpful about vegetables?
So vegetables are a really good source of carbohydrates and people are definitely not eating enough. And so I always tell my patients to focus on fruits and vegetables throughout the day for meals and snacks.
So have them at every meal?
Yep, have them at every meal. The beets, you know, roasted with dinner. You can throw the arugula into a sandwich, snacking on carrots, things like that.
Great. So lots of complex carbohydrates here. Tell us about the spaghetti squash.
I love spaghetti squash because we tell people to, you know, focus on fruits and vegetables for their carbohydrates and some grains, some beans. And if you're used to eating a lot of grains, the spaghetti squash can make a nice pasta substitute.
Mm.
Just roast it in the oven and you take a fork through it and it shreds just like pasta.
Really?
Yep.
I've got to try it. And then fats are important, aren't they?
Yes, healthy fats. And these nuts here are definitely a source of healthy fats along with the flaxseed oil. Now, this should be not cooked, so this is a great salad topper.
Mm, yes, never heat.
Never
apply
heat, flax.
Heat to flaxseed oil or flax oil. And it also gives us the
omega-3s. Yes, and so we're looking for that balance of omega-3 to omega-6s to reduce inflammation.
Mm. Tell us about the fruit that we've got here.
So we've got berries and cherries, and they're all moderately glycemic index, so they don't raise blood sugar too much. And they're great for just snacking on, throwing in your oatmeal in the morning. Lots of applications for berries and cherries.
Yes.
And they've got a lot of like vitamin C and fiber.
And antioxidants.
And antioxidants.
But that soluble fiber you just mentioned, that's perfect for keeping the blood sugar down, isn't it?
Yeah.
And speaking of soluble fiber, there's lots and legumes.
Lots and beans, yes, legumes. And so anything from canned beans to lentils, which I feel like are nobody eats lentils enough. They're wonderful.
They are. I love lentils.
And they're so easy to cook, too. They take 30 minutes.
Yes, they do. I noticed that you don't have them in cans here in this country. I find
sometimes I find them in cans, but most of the time they're in a package. And I tell you, I bet 1 out of 10 of my patients ever cooks with lentils. So I always am go lentils. They have a lot of iron and protein.
Yes, they do. You get lots of minerals and B vitamins and things from them. And then talk to us about grains. Whole grains are much, much better than
Yep, we talked about that glycemic index. So whole grains are going to raise your blood sugar a lot less than refined grains. And they also have more B vitamins and more fiber, which are going to help as well. They should be about a quarter of your plate. So, and you know, maybe once or twice a day. I find that a lot of people are having grains and bread like all day throughout the day, but you know, once or twice a day can really help with blood sugar as well.
Good point. And blood sugar, I think it's more sustained when you've got legumes with your grains.
Exactly.
So that's a really nice combination. Now, what have you got here?
This is myo-inositol. This is a supplement we sell at Pulling Down the Moon. It's almost like a natural version of metformin, so it helps sensitize your body to insulin. And it also can help with the side effects of PCOS.
So how do you take it?
You take it by the spoonful. You can throw it into smoothies or into a beverage, a glass of water. It's really easy to take, and it's got magnesium as well, which a lot of people are deficient in.
Excellent. Well, I think we've given our viewers a lot of practical ideas here on how to move forward from a dietary perspective.
Heart disease is not just a man's disease. A study reported in the New England Journal of Medicine compared two groups of middle-aged women. The first group had 80% fewer heart attacks than the second. What was the difference? The first group were all a healthy weight, did not smoke, and exercised at least 30 minutes a day. These things, maintaining a healthy weight, not smoking, and exercising, were the triple advantage against heart disease. A healthy heart is another ageless advantage.
Now it's time for your questions. And I have a text from Tanisha. Tanisha asks, I've been trying to get pregnant for 4 years now. The doctors say my tubes are blocked and she is not comfortable trying to clear them. Are you able to help me? Well, hi Tanisha. I'm really sorry to hear that your tubes are blocked. The reason your doctor is reluctant to do surgery to clear them is that there are often multiple blockages along the tube. And the tube is really fine. So the success of surgery is actually quite limited, because you can't go clearing blockages all the way along. Also, the lining of that tube, or of the both tubes often, is very fine, and there are little hairs that waft the egg along, and there's no way to restore those once they're damaged. Often in the process of surgery, there's scarring that's caused in the abdomen as well. So your doctor has your best interests at heart when she's saying that surgery is not your best option. Now, I don't know if you're able to get IVF or in vitro fertilization. If that's an option for you, that's going to give you a really good chance of success. Now, Arlene called and said, is there a naturopathic remedy for a mesh repair that has triggered urgency and urge incontinence? Ah, Arlene, this is a tricky one. Many women have bladder surgery and afterwards they get this problem of increased irritability of the bladder. And it's just as a result of having surgery, really. Not necessarily of mesh repairs, though perhaps a little more common with that. Now, I'm not aware of any naturopathic remedies for this condition, but there are some foods and drinks that you should avoid. For example, alcohol and caffeine are both diuretics. They're going to fill the bladder up really fast. And the other thing about caffeinated foods and drinks is they are going to make your bladder more irritable, just as they make the bowel more irritable, and therefore you are more likely to leak and have more frequent trips to the bathroom when you have caffeine in your system. Now, the natural tendency when you have a problem with the bladder is to limit how much you drink so that you don't have to go to the bathroom so often, less likely to have an accident. But you know, it's important to keep drinking and to keep your urine dilute, because concentrated urine is going to be more irritating to the bladder. You can also do bladder training, in which you teach your bladder to hold on for an extra half an hour and an extra half an hour. And over time, your bladder will be able to hold more before you have to go to the bathroom. And don't forget, even though you've got the mesh repair, that you still need to do pelvic floor exercises so that you can hold on when you need to or when you start to leak. Now, a number of callers have asked the same question, which is, I have sleep apnea, I've been given a CPAP machine, but it does not help me. What can I do, please? Well, be sure to let your provider know that the CPAP machine is not helping you.
They want to know that you're not using it. You know, it's really important to tell them. Now, there are many different machines out there, many different masks. There's the nasal one, there's the full face mask, and there's some variations in between. There's the nasal prongs. There's different things that you can use, and there's new ones coming out on the market all the time. So go back to your provider, make sure that they can't offer you something that is more suitable for you. If you keep trying different things, it's still not working. Another thing you can try is what you saw on our show that was on sleep apnea, which is the dental appliance. It's called a mandibular advancement splint, and it brings the lower jaw forward when you're asleep so that your tongue doesn't fall back. Many dentists are now providing these, or you can go online, believe it or not, and buy them directly from the American Sleep Association. Their website is americansleepassociation.com, and they will give you all the instructions. You'll need to ring them. You give you all the instructions, and then they'll send you the kit. You can take it, and then they will fit it for you, send it back. So that's another good option. Well, thanks for sending your questions. Please keep them coming. Our number's 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. And if you want to text us or call us from overseas, it's 301-960-5144. That number again, 301-960-5144. And remember, you can also leave your questions for me on our Facebook page, either as a message or a post, and that's Go Healthy for Good on Facebook. Now, let's go to the veggie section at the supermarket. Watercress is one of the oldest known leaf vegetables consumed by man. It's a cousin to mustard and radish. You can tell because they all have that peppery, tangy flavour that not everyone enjoys. But a small amount in a salad can give it a really interesting flavour. As its name suggests, it grows in water. And if left to grow, it can grow up to 4 feet. 1 cup of chopped cress contains just 4 calories, of which half are protein. Like almost all the green leafy vegetables, it's got plenty of vitamin K and omega-3 fats. It also contains the minerals iron, calcium, and iodine. A study of breast cancer patients has shown it has the ability to suppress the growth of solid tumours. So you might want to add it to your anti-cancer juicing regime. Bon appetit. In the studio now, we have Dr. Joseph Doyle, gynecologist, and Nicole Holovac, nutritionist, to discuss the treatment of PCOS. Joseph mentioned earlier in the show that prolonged episodes without a period can increase the risk of precancer, which can then progress to cancer of the endometrium or the uterus. I asked him what can be done to prevent this.
There's kind of two ways. There's two populations, we think. Those who are trying to get pregnant and those who aren't trying to get pregnant. The people who are trying to get pregnant, there's things you can do so that they ovulate on a regular basis. And so that not only protects their lining, the lining of the uterus, but also gives them that chance at conception. The group that's not interested in pregnancy, though, it's important to us that we protect their lining. So you want them to have regular periods. A nice other thing is many of the treatments that make your cycle regular also can help with, you know, annoying side effects like excess hair or acne. So birth control pills are just an easy way that addresses making a cycle regular and also helps with kind of the bothersome side effects as well.
So, and you don't worry so much about the risk of cardiovascular disease with the birth control pill?
So, I mean, that's an interesting question. They have looked at kind of diabetes risk when you have people on birth control pills, and the weight of the evidence looks like you're still coming out better ahead. You're coming out better by the birth control pills helps with your androgens. That also hurts your cardiovascular risk. So it's a little bit of a balance, but the net effect is pills are the way to go.
And there are pills that are better. They have less of a cardiovascular risk than others, and so choosing that pill is important.
Yeah, some of the classic progesterones are based around a precursor that is more androgenic or more like testosterone. So you want to pick the newer generation ones that have less of that androgenic side effects.
So choosing well and perhaps seeing a gynecologist for that choice.
I'd get a little prep there, yeah.
Good idea. Nicole, as a nutritionist, I'm sure you help women with PCOS who are dealing with the weight gain side or the obesity side of things.
Yes, I see that a lot. And so we have a targeted
nutrition plan for them. Not too low in calories, not too high in calories. We want to find that sweet spot. Focusing on fruits and vegetables at every meal and snack, and really focusing on the lower or the medium glycemic carbohydrates, things like beans and whole grains and fruits and vegetables.
Now, Dr. Doyle, you talked about two groups of women, those who don't want to get pregnant, but then the group that do want to get pregnant, they're pursuing infertility treatment. What do you advise for them?
Right. So the first step, as Nicole was mentioning, you know, the first step is weight loss. So we found that just losing 5 to 10% of your total body weight, which, you know, taken little steps at a time to get there, the majority of women who don't have regular cycles will return to normal ovulation. So diet's just the best first way to go. Now, there are people who won't restore their regular cycles even when they've lost weight or they have a difficult time with that weight. There are medications that we can use that helps them, you know, cycle instead of more like 60, 80 days, more on that regular 30-day kind of window of time. And so instead of just a few shots at pregnancy a year, they get more like that standard once a month.
And then also, by losing weight first, those infertility drugs become more effective as well.
Absolutely. And not only do they become more effective, but that sets you up for a better pregnancy too.
Yes, absolutely, because I look after women with diabetes in pregnancy.
Yeah, we're trying to save you from it.
Yes, yes. Keep my clinic smaller. Nicole, what do you recommend in terms of the elevated cholesterol, the elevated lipids that these women often have?
Weight loss and soluble fiber, definitely. And foods that have soluble fiber are beans, fruits and vegetables, certain fruits and vegetables.
Mm. And we mentioned the berries.
The berries, apples is another good one.
Oats. And then oats do. And, yeah. And you can even add oat bran to your breakfast cereal, like if you're cooking oatmeal, throw some extra oat bran in, which will boost the soluble fiber too, won't it?
Yeah. Berries and oatmeal are a great way to start the day.
Ah, oh, berries and oatmeal. Okay, so there's our breakfast prescription, right?
Yep.
Now, Joseph, tell us about the hirsutism. What treatment options do women have in terms of medications or even just hair removal?
Yeah, so, like we were talking about earlier, the hair is a problem because of the androgens. So you want to address the androgens like testosterone. One of the best things that will do that is the birth control pills. It will reduce your testosterone levels. It also increases the protein that actually binds up all that free androgen floating around so that if it's bound up by protein, your body doesn't really see it. There are medications that actually have anti-androgen properties. They block the androgen receptor or they interfere with its synthesis. You can use those. Now, an important thing, you always want to be on a birth control pill with those because any sort of anti-androgen, if you got pregnant, you know, a male fetus needs those androgens to develop. So you always have to use those in combination with a pill. There are topical preparations that you can use as well. Those tend to, you know, they work as long as you're using them. If you stop them, the hair growth typically returns, but it's easy enough. It's just applied to the areas that are bothersome to you. Mm. There are treatments that, like electrolysis and laser hair removal, those tend to be very, very effective treatments, but they're quite expensive. Regardless of the route you go, any one of those, the medications, birth control pills, even these expensive treatments, the most important thing that I always have to prepare patients for is it's going to take 6 months before you see like a durable effect in this. So you have to have some patience with that. And you set that expectation, you will make steady progress, and that's what kind of keeps people going.
Mm. And that 6 month is because of the follicle and how slow hair grows and the follicle
exactly.
response.
So the androgenized follicles that's there, you're not really going to treat that one, but catching that next wave is the goal.
Yeah, so it just takes time. And Nicole, tell us, what do you recommend in terms of diabetes or pre-diabetes for people from a nutrition perspective?
Some of the same things that we've been talking about, lots of fruits and vegetables, eating balanced meals and snacks throughout the day, so combining protein and carbohydrate to kind of keep your blood sugar steady throughout the day.
Stand by, this conversation is not over yet. And see what's in store for Lana and Phil right after the break.
All day long, I solve problems. It's nuts and bolts and grease. And I love it. But at the end of the day, I think about the world's problems. I wonder why we're all here and how it will end. And I found something that makes sense of it all. Takes the nuts and bolts of history and paints a bigger picture. Now, I have hope.
And we're back. Remember, Lana had ovarian drilling in order to conceive. That's where about 10 holes are made across the surface of the ovary. This allows for more chance of a natural egg release with ovulation. Here's the last part of Lana and Phil's story.
If they do feel like something's not quite right, because you can still have this condition and get your period, but I've been very irregular or have very light periods and you're actually not ovulating. So if you're worried, keep asking questions until you're happy that everything's okay. Ask to be ultrasound so they can see the condition of your ovaries. And if you know you have the condition and you want to have children, don't wait too long. If you are struggling, there is light at the end of the tunnel, and just do everything you can to keep fighting and keep trying, because it's definitely worth it.
Probably if I go back to our dating before we got married, gotta watch what I say, she's sitting right here.
Horse bite.
What should I say? Women become a little bit sensitive around certain times, and when you say a few things and you get a sharp reminder that, you know, that was borderline conversation, then and you should steer away from that. But the difficulty was that this would happen randomly throughout, you know, a month type program, and knowing I couldn't justify it until she actually explained to me what was happening to her system. Years later on, of course, once you're married, I mean, all the details of what's going on is then becomes more and more important. I've been mainly a vegetarian my whole life, into fitness and outdoor sports and things. So I came back with an extremely good result, and it put us in a very good position to be able to move forward. So we went for our IVF orientation session. So we were sitting, we got counselling, we got the whole thing. And we're only like, what was it? A month, 4 weeks away from the whole process starting. And Lana comes to me, and she's got this little wrapped up gift present with a bow around it. And I open it up, and here's this pregnancy test in there, which is positive. So it was a day to celebrate.
Yeah.
We're members of a church, and we had prayer teams praying for us there. We had our family praying for us. We were praying. And so for, you know, this to happen, it was like, well, this is a miracle, you know.
Yeah.
12th hour. God's got a sense of humour. Yeah. Take you right to the point.
Yeah.
To you know, strengthen your faith and everything. And,
yeah.
And then celebration.
If I'd known that, I would have probably had it done a lot sooner. So I wouldn't, if someone's thinking about having that done with a condition, I wouldn't be too concerned about it. But also, I think that, I mean, there are other avenues to treat polycystic ovaries. So there are natural treatments that you can try, which I did try. But I think for me, because I've got quite a severe case, things would only last for a certain amount of time, so it would wear off. My body would get used to it. But not everybody's like that. So you could find that if you went and used natural yam cream, it would be very successful.
That's right. So keep trying, don't give up. Now, back to our guest experts, Nicole and Joseph. I asked Dr. Tall what happens to women with their PCOS when they near menopause and beyond.
Interestingly enough, people who have really irregular periods early in their life oftentimes start having regular periods later. And that's just kind of the, you know, a lot of this is driven by all those follicles in the ovaries as we get older, that size of that pool just gets smaller and smaller, so that kind of makes people, instead of having these really regular cycles, can go back to regularly cycling, surprisingly enough, just before menopause. Now, in menopause...
Just when they don't want it. But
yeah,
anyway,
right, and yeah. Then they're back. Now, menopause is an important time because, remember, we're talking about a lot of things that have cumulative risk to you. So cardiovascular disease, elevated cholesterol, diabetes, those are all things that, you know, they're kind of those classically silent diseases that you don't really feel till later on, and then they start having big implications. So, you know, pre-diabetes or diabetes or elevated cholesterol, all that stuff that's typical of PCOS during our reproductive years is going to carry through, and so that risk will kind of persist. So even though your cycles might regularize, you hit menopause, you still have to, that's still a population that's at risk after the fact. So they have to continue screening their cholesterol, and they have to keep watching out for that risk of diabetes. All these markers are elevated, and they really are good at predicting cardiovascular risk. So you have to watch this population closely for all those kind of heart disease, vascular disease, stroke.
Right. Now, Nicole, we talked about diet, but what physical activity do you recommend for these women? What do you give them, an exercise program or a suggestion there?
I suggest it, and I have some resources that I like to share with people. I tend to recommend strength training and high impact, like interval type of stuff. I've been reading a lot of studies lately about how that can help with insulin resistance.
So tease that out for us a little bit. So you do strength training and then interval training.
Yes. Yeah, so instead of cardio, you know, just being on a treadmill for 40 minutes, 60 minutes, up and down type of things.
So
where your heart rate goes up and down.
Yeah. So do a bit of a sprint.
Yep.
And then slow it down, catch up your oxygen debt. Yeah,
exactly.
Do that for a while and then do another sprint. So how many seconds or minutes?
I don't get that exact with people, but there's plenty of resources out there if you're interested in that type of physical activity.
So to intermittent training, it's really important. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of women who have PCOS, they want to drop a lot of weight fast, and they tend to just go hard out. Really, yeah, high impact, high heart rate exercise.
And but that can be detrimental if you do too much of that. Yeah.
Yeah. And you need to be down further in the fat burning zone, mm-hmm, with your heart rate, don't you?
Yep.
And it doesn't hurt to do that sprint, get your heart rate up into the higher level, but do a lot of your exercise down in that fat burning zone.
And then a lot of women neglect the strength training aspect, for sure. They're doing all cardio and not doing any.
So lifting the weights or doing push-ups, just using your body weight. Yep. Well, I want to thank you both for being here. We've run out of time. It's been great having you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
And may you meet in your own building.
Yes.
Well, that was a whirlwind tour of PCOS. It's a complex disease that clearly has different management strategies depending on what stage of life you're in. However, whether you're planning a pregnancy or just wanting to reduce its side effects, the take-home message is to lose 5 to 10% of your weight to ameliorate its effects. That will be good for you now and in the future. And be sure to watch out for type 2 diabetes or pre-diabetes. Have a blood test every year or so. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.